Welcome to Back on the Broomstick,
a modern witch's spoken word grimoire,
where two witchy friends from way back are reconnecting to their pagan roots after a long period of mundanity.
We're rewalking the path of the wise and trying out all the latest spells, rituals, and magical theory in today's witchcraft and pagan practices.
So grab your wand and your incense,
your cauldron and your crystals,
and join us
as we get
back on the broomstick.
Hi, and welcome to Back on the Broomstick. Today, we'll be doing another Witch's Answer episode where we take questions that you've sent in through email and DMs and answer them for everyone to hear. I'm Layla.
I'm Shell, and I love these. These are fun because people have good questions and people make me giggle. I love people. Y'all are great.
You definitely make us think. You make us dig deep into our books of shadows and pull out all these answers. And I can't wait to dive in. We have a few tarot questions. We've got some spell and ritual questions. We've got incense questions, a little bit of everything.
And at the end, we have a really big surprise for everybody. People have been having a special request lately. There's been a rumor of a wise spell that I've talked about many a times. And if you stay tuned to the end, you just might get what you've been long waiting for.
There is a spell, a hex to be exact, a deep, dark hex that we have been keeping a secret but have talked about a few times. So yeah, stick around to the end and you might learn how to do it. So, Shell, if you reach into our grab bag of emails, what have we got here from our listeners?
Everybody who's sent in questions has been great. And I just want to start off by saying that if we do not get to your question, do not take offense to it. We just had a bunch and we just had to pick what we could fit into a time frame. Okay, that being said, Kimberly writes, "Hi, I host a monthly full moon and new moon ritual at a local metaphysical shop. Do you by chance have any ideas for activities to use the moon energy? We have made intention jars, smudges, candles, moon water, and of course we burn things." I love that part. "I'm just looking for new and fresh ideas. Thought I would pick your brain." All right, what do you got for Kimberly, Layla?
Well, Kimberly and group sound like crafty witches to me, and it definitely looks like they're not just raising energy at the new and full moons, but they're putting it into something that they're creating, which is a great idea and a wonderful way to harness it other than just doing moon water, which, you know, we all know and love. This is a tough one because you can do anything. You can put that energy into anything. So you're obviously using new moons for your intention setting, for new beginnings, to put your wishes out there to the universe. And full moons, that's more your culmination. That's when you kind of look and see the seeds that you've planted and kind of see where things are going. So during those times, you can do crocheting. You can do some knot magic. Try that a little bit. Try different types of knots. If you're green witches, you can put that energy into seeds or potted plants and then make some of those knotted macrame plant hangers. It's a great way to keep energy in a home. But I mean, anything that you can do that's crafty, you can direct energy into that if that's your bag.
Now, if you want something just a little more on the fly here, because you just got shit going on in your life and you're trying to use that moon energy to pull it all together, clean. Okay, people, clean. You know, cleaning is a ritual. I'll fight you for it. Cleaning a space. You're not just cleaning your house, which obviously we all got to do, and that sucks. But it's also kind of a metaphorical thing that, you know, maybe by mopping your floor or sweeping or, you know, taking some extra things and putting them in storage or what have you, you're cleaning your space, but you're also kind of mentally and spiritually cleaning your space. I kind of see them all kind of work hand in hand. And clean people. It's good for you.
I really do like physical manifestations of a spell. Cleaning is a good one. You can see that you have done something and that lifts your spirit as well and can raise vibrations. But creating something, I'm definitely a crafty witch and I really like to create something with my own hands and my own energy. And not just the knot work, which I didn't see in your list, Kimberly, but one thing that has stuck with me for a very long time is clay work.
Oh my God, you've been doing that forever.
Yeah, well, you did too. Back in the day, we were involved in a women's group from the pagan community we were in where we would get together once a month. And one of the things we did was create clay objects. And I created like a Venus of Willendorf type statue. And I have had that goddess statue on my altar for a good
forever.
Yeah, decades now. And You were helping me pack last weekend, and I thought I had lost it, and it about lost my mind. She's that important to me.
Boom, found it.
You did. You did. And we'll talk about the moving thing later. Miss, your astrology thing predicted me moving right after the eclipse. But
I have an episode to prove it.
Different podcast. Anyway, creating something with your hands, anything to put that energy in. Pick a different person each month and have that person bring the intention. Maybe it's something for their life or someone that they know. And also bring the idea of what to create to put that energy into to kind of release out to the world for the next month. So maybe rotate that for each person in your circle.
Another thing could be, I always take everything back to divination. Sorry, can't help it. Have like a full moon or a dark moon, for that matter, divination night. And whether it's the full moon or the dark moon can maybe gear your questioning or your intention, but have a divination night because I like to pull cards on moons. I don't know. Am I weird? Is it me?
Yes, you are weird. But yeah, pulling cards on any special night. I love it. I just did that at the solar eclipse and it was quite fun.
So clean and pull a tarot card. That's my biggest advice.
And I'm going to tell you to journal.
Of course you are.
Create journals.
Why don't you tell them to meditate while you're at it?
I am going to tell them to meditate while they're at it. But no, creating journals, creating a book of shadows, decorating it. I just learned something cool about using glue sticks to create designs and then painting over it, decoupaging stickers. But creating a book of shadows or creating paper are a fabulous tool to charge, and that everybody has something that people have all put their energy into from that circle to write their magical memories in.
You know, we've done actually, as much as I laugh at the crafty part, we've done a lot of crafts for different rituals. And some of those things are things I still have to this day, 20, 30 plus years. And yeah. They are prized possessions. We're in the moment. I'm like, why am I painting a rock? Now I'm glad I painted the rock and kept it. Okay.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. They have a lot more meaning than something you just purchase.
Right. Now, I kind of, you know, I was talking about divination, so I kind of want to gear into our next question from Alina. She asks about pulling daily cards. She says, when I pull dailies, I've gotten the same card twice in a row. It seems like they're yelling at me.
Yes,
they are, Alina. What are the odds of this happening? 100%?
No.
Not 100%, but what do you think? What are the odds that you're going to pull the same card twice in a row?
Well, mathematically, the odds, if you're using a traditional tarot deck, are 1 in 78.
Now, there could be a shuffling thing, like how good did you shuffle? And you know, you weren't clear in your message if you were a good shuffler or not. You know, did you shuffle them good? And if you're sitting there right now listening to me and you're nodding, yes, Shell, I shuffled them good, then my answer is, you better listen because they're yelling.
Yes. And in your message, Alina, you say, it seems like they're yelling at me. That's your clue right there. If it feels like they're yelling at you, they are.
Yelling at you.
There's a distinct difference in the way it feels when you're reading cards, when a card just falls out, as opposed to when a card jumps out of the deck, or when a card is trying to scream at you something by coming out twice, or it's just a 1 in 78 coincidence. You'll know, you can feel that. And you know, obviously, they are definitely screaming at you some type of message. Usually when that happens, I have found, and other readers as well, Shell, back me up on this, say that that does mean you're ignoring something. They're screaming at you for a reason.
Yeah.
The universe has a way of slapping you upside the head over and over and over again until you do what they think is the best path or what's right for you. So in this case, you're ignoring some type of message.
What I would say is, whatever that card may be, I would maybe, you know, look up that card, look at it, look it up in the little booklet that comes with it, or Google it or whatever floats your boat, but see what that card means to you and what relevance it has right now, because I don't know, I got a strong feeling it's yelling at you and you better listen.
Yeah, definitely. Especially if it's a major arcana, you know, those are the bigger themes in our lives. So if that's jumping out at you repeatedly, then there's definitely some piece of advice or faded thing, some karmic thing that you're missing. You know, maybe you're with someone you shouldn't be. Maybe you're, I don't know, I'm getting a vibe here.
Uh-oh. Come on, Layla, give it to us.
I definitely feel like there's a person in your life. I don't know if this is a romantic relationship or not, but it feels like there's a person in your life that needs to be removed. You keep trying to get this person out and it just keeps coming back. So I feel like you need to make some better boundaries. I'm not sure. Anyway.
Wow. In that media moment,
there you go.
Linda, what's our next question?
Our next question comes from Tracy. And this actually is a lovely question that came up during one of your workshops at Sacred Space, Shell. Tracy says that she's been an out-of-the-closet witch since the late 80s and solitary because, you know, hey, that's the way it goes sometimes. She says that her question is about incense. She says, it occurred to me recently that maybe I could make incense from the used herbal teas I make. If they dry out, would they make a decent herbal incense? Shell, do you want to answer that one?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, that's the short answer. But yeah, there's actually a bunch of things that you can do with your used tea. And that is one of them. You can also use it as a fertilizer. Actually, if you're using herbal tea, you can use your tea bags two or three times before you dispose of them. I wouldn't recommend that if you're using black tea for the caffeine purposes, because then every time you use it, less caffeine. Bummer. But yeah, I would definitely, definitely dry them out and use them for incense. You know, waste not, want not, man. That's like my motto. And, you know, I'm actually crafting a different workshop as we speak about how incense and tea, if you're using organic ingredients, are really the same damn thing, whether you're burning it, whether you're sipping it, whether you're smoking it, it doesn't matter. So yeah, dry that shit out. I would definitely make sure that all of those ingredients align with your intention for the incense. But if you're just burning it to burn it for the sake of something smelling good, rock on. But otherwise, I would definitely make sure that what is in that tea bag aligns with your intention for that incense.
Say you're making a, you know, communication in my relationship spell, and you put in rose hips and you put in chamomile and maybe you put in some mint.
You put in orange.
So that you can have these good conversations and still have loving, peaceful vibe going on as well. So you do this spell and you create this herbal blend. You put that in your tea. And as you're sipping your tea, you're reinforcing the spell. You then take those herbs and dry them out again, reinforcing the spell, releasing that energy to the universe. And then you burn it as an incense while again stating the intention that you want to have good communication in your relationship. You could even take some of those, not necessarily the rose hips, but you can take rose petals and similar herbs and add them to your smokables. So now you are doing the spell in three different ways with the same ingredients. So the spell has been not only presented as smoke and incense to the universe, but you have consumed those energies within you as well. And it's an excellent way to honor those herbs. Like Shell said, waste not, want not, reuse them, make it a tea, turn it into an incense, and then take those ashes and add that to your black salt. Now you have black salt that is charged with the idea of good communication, good relationship. Yeah, very much so. We agree with reusing herbs in multiple ways.
Real quick PSA here, folks. Make sure with your personal healthcare provider that anything you are ingesting is safe and healthy for you. And we are not telling you what to ingest, drink, smoke, whatever. Consult with your physician. We're not doctors.
Excellent PSA. Also with the tea, like Shell said, you're not going to get as much caffeine if you reuse it. It can also get very bitter depending on the type of tea leaf you use. Just keep an eye out on your tastes to see if you like to reuse it as far as a tea bag goes.
Right, because that, especially with black tea, that shit's only real good one or two times around. If you start trying to use it a third and fourth time, it is bitter. But, you know, hey, there are people who like bitter tea, not judging.
My recommendation, sip it once. Burn it as incense, make a complimentary smokable, and just do all of it at once to enhance your spell work.
Waste not, want not, folks.
Exactly. All right. So our next question also has to do with, you know, we were just talking about the workshops we did at Sacred Space. We also got an email from Alicia, who was another attendee at Sacred Space in Maryland this past March. Now, Shell, we were just talking about being in the vendor room at Laura Tempest Zachroff's stall, looking at all her fabulous art. And I think we encountered a fan, maybe Alicia, in the wild. Do you remember
that? Fan in the wild alert. Now, Alicia, if that was you, I just want you to know real quick, we were fangirling ourselves at the moment. So you should have stayed and chatted.
Yeah, by the
You
time we
turned
turned
and you
around
were
and
gone.
you melted into the crowd, we were so excited to actually meet a fan in the wild. It
We
was
talked
really
about it all.
cool.
We actually did talk about it the whole rest of the weekend. We're like, oh my God, fan in the wild.
Thank you for going. I hope you had as marvelous of a time at Sacred Space as we did. It was absolutely phenomenal, and I'm still glowing from all the energy.
I wish I was back in Maryland, just saying.
Alisa really was just emailing to say hi and let us know about some of her tarot rituals. She says that what she likes to do is a self-blessing ritual before she does tarot. And I don't always do this, but I think having a routine with your tarot readings, especially if you're doing them for yourself, can be really fantastic. And I love how, yeah, Alicia says she does a self-blessing and then she does her tarot pull. And then afterwards, she does some gentle chair yoga. And I think that is such a nice thing to incorporate as a routine in your day. We already recommend doing a daily tarot pull and journaling about it to deepen your practice, to deepen your connection to the cards. You know, if you add some meditation and self-blessings and movement into it, that's so much more magical. So thank you, Alicia, for sharing that.
And by the way, Alicia, we love Irene Glass too.
She's
Woo!
amazing. Woot woot. All right. What have we got next?
Next, we have Amanda. Amanda's enamored by my vast collection of tarot
A
decks.
lot of people are, Shel.
I am too. So, Amanda's looking for a small deck as far as small in size. You know, I've had a lot of people ask me this because I don't know. I have these enormous long fingers and I am the only one and I get it. And there are people with smaller hands that want smaller decks because they're easier. I happen to at Sacred Space, which we were just talking about, buy two more decks because who wouldn't? And I happen to buy a smaller deck. Now, this is not what would be considered a miniature deck because the Rider-Waite series puts out a Rider-Waite mini deck, so to say. I wouldn't call this a mini deck. It's just smaller. And I really like this, the Fellowship of the Fool. And this deck was created by Helena Dominic, who was also a presenter at Sacred Space. And this would be the perfect deck for someone who has a hard time shuffling larger cards. But they do create that Rider-Waite original deck in like six different sizes. So you actually can get that OG Rider-Waite deck in a smaller size that's not the mini. I've gotten a few decks that come in tins. Sometimes you'll see the tin deck. Those that come in a tin are generally a smaller size than the traditional decks. So I would maybe look out for some of those. A really fun one, if you're like a Halloween lover, is they have a Halloween tarot that comes in a tin that is a smaller size deck. Or my last option would be a round deck. We actually saw folks with round decks at Sacred Space.
The Mother Peace Tarot.
And I know there are a couple other ones besides the Mother Peace, but a round tarot might help you with that. So that is my advice on non-traditional smaller size decks, Amanda. So I would maybe check some of those out online or at your local metaphysical shop.
And also, most popular decks come in a smaller, like traditional playing card deck size. For example, Phyllis Curat's The Witch's Wisdom Tarot, I believe, just recently came out with a reprint, and it's a smaller version of her cards, specifically because people had said they had trouble handling the larger size deck.
Right.
And I know there are several decks that will have a larger version and then a smaller playing card version. So if you see a deck that you like, check with the publisher and see if they reprint it in a different size. Like Shell said, some come in more than one.
Right. They're a lot easier to find than you think. And if you don't have a ton of options in your area locally, shoot us another email and I will suggest to you some shops here in Salem that you can do online shopping.
Actually, we've had a couple of requests for you to suggest your favorite shops in Salem. I know I've sent a few emails out to people with those, but we will do a short review of Salem shops at some point
Oh,
episode
hell yeah, we will.
and make sure to give those out to people. We do mention the ones that we like occasionally in episodes, but we'll combine it all into one
We'll
episode.
be more comprehensive.
That's right. That's right. Let's see here. All right, what have we got next? Oh, witch babes. We're witch babes. I could be a witch babe.
Us? Hell yeah.
So this message is from Ari Star. I love this question. I thought this was the coolest thing. So Ari asks, is it a good idea or is it necessary to cleanse primordial ingredients like dirt, sand, shells, etc.? For context, they say they were crafting a ritual for a close friend's fertility and cleansed my normal tools, but wasn't sure about the oyster shell or the sand. I want to keep the nature of the sand and shell, but wouldn't want previous external energies lingering. Or for dirt, what if the grounds are cursed? That would junk up some things. Thank you for your insights. With gratitude, Ari Star.
I almost have a couple answers for this.
Yeah, me too.
Yes and no.
Me too. I have the same answer. So weird.
My yes would be, I would probably do the shells, not the dirt and sand.
My yes would only be if they had previously been in a place that had some type of strong energy that was not in alignment with what it normally would have. Say, for example, you have a quartz. Say you found a clear quartz, which would normally be for clarity, for protection, for divination, and you found it in a cursed forest. So maybe it has picked up some of the energies from the place where it was. I believe that most items have their own energies and their own spirit, their own animus. I am an animist. So I think those shells and that sand and that dirt has its own energy and its own alignments. So you would not need to cleanse it. You would just need to let it be what it is and use it the way that it wants to be used according to its nature in your spell work. But if, say, that shell had been on someone else's altar for a while, yes, you'd want to cleanse it. Say it had been in a shop for a while, you might want to cleanse it. But if something that you just picked up randomly, most of the time you will not need to cleanse it. Just go with the energies that it already has.
I love that answer. I just kind of do it more of the shell kind of had this living being in it. So you want to cleanse those energies out. Where the dirt in the sand, I kind of look as a kind of self-cleansing, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So like a self-cleaning oven. So I kind of picture them as more self-cleaning, whereas the shell has kind of the residual energies of that being that was housed in it previously.
See, I guess that's where we differ a little bit, because I wouldn't cleanse that. I would feel that that is part of its true nature. And so I would want to follow the energies of its true nature.
Wait. Do you cleanse a new house when you move into it after someone else?
That's different. You know, the crab's energies I would put into my spell, whereas the people in the house, to me, that's a little different.
But the shell is just the house.
Yes, but the crab is just a crab. It's not a person. I guess maybe the crab had a tragic life or something. I don't know, but I think I prefer to just work with the energies as they lay, as opposed to if a person put their energies on that shell or on that house, that I would probably want to cleanse. Or like I said, if you're in an area, like sometimes places can have a shit ton of energy for all sorts of different reasons. Like say a cemetery, if you get dirt from a cemetery, you know, you'd need to be very careful, because depending on what grave or what part of the cemetery you got that from, if you did the right requests when you got that dirt, that could have
very... I'd be careful what I use that dirt for, though, because I got it from a cemetery.
Exactly. So cemetery dirt is going to be different than forest dirt, is going to be different than stream dirt. So know what you're working with, know the energies of what you're working with, and know where it came from and how it's been used before.
For different reasons, our answers are yes and no.
Yeah, there you go. We both say a lot that intention is everything. If you pick up that shell and you want to use it as a cauldron, that kind of fits with shell energy, but maybe you want to use it to hold your smudge stick. And now it's going to be like fire energy. You can still have that work for you because of your intention and how you want to use it. But going with what it wants to be, going with the nature of that component, will make your magic that much more potent, in my opinion. If you work with the energy that's already there in that natural element, it's going to enhance your spell work.
Flow is easier.
And there you go. All right. So I hope that answers your question, Ari. It's a big question. And you're going to get different answers depending on the witch.
Okay. So now we have a good one from Jessica. Jessica is realizing a lot of stuff that she was just doing on her own is witchcraft. Hey, but her question comes into, she's collected moon water and storm water for spell work. And she wants us to talk more about uses and types of water and water work. This, Jessica, This could totally be a total episode in and of itself,
and it will.
But to kind of address it in the moment, and I don't want to skip information, but you're asking a big question. We got a lot of big questions here. You can use it for consecrating your tools. You know, you can use your moon water to consecrate, you know, maybe your athame or your chalice or what have you. You can use it to do sigil work. Like Layla has said before, you can make sigils out of your water. I would definitely be careful with storm water and sigils because there's a little bit of chaos going on there. Use your water wisely. But there's a lot of different things, spell work you can do. You can drink it as long as you know it's clean. And what are some things you could think of, Layla?
I think that using sun water is excellent for, like Shell said, if I was going to charge my tools or empower things, I would definitely use solar charged water. Maybe not necessarily eclipse water, because that's going to be a little
Hell
different.
No.
But water charged by the sun. If you want to get really specific, you can pick a certain astrological sign to charge it under. But just plain old sun water is definitely going to work for you to empower things, to give that vitality, the life-giving sun energy. If you're going to use storm water, that's some very powerful water. And in an episode, we'll get into different types of storms, snow water, if there's lightning or no lightning. But typically, storm water is used to empower spells. It's going to be used for hexes and curses, to break hexes and curses, to bring in different types of energy and power into your workings.
And when we do an episode on it, we'll also talk about how you can use it with those different varied intentions into spell bottles and stuff. Again, just a big question to get into right now.
Yep. New moon water is good for manifesting. It's good for calling things into your life. Full moon is good for vitality.
That's the one you'd want to drink.
It's great for protection. It's great for you. It's great for increasing psychic abilities. So yeah, witches nowadays, it's a big thing. Moon water and sun water used to pretty much be it. But now you can get storm water and dew water.
Florida water.
I've been kind of into water lately. Shell and I have both the last couple of years been kind of leaning towards water witchery. I do charge moon water and sun water, but not a lot. More so I work with water of place, like the well water on my father's land or the water from Lake Ontario or from the Finger Lakes.
I'm not too far from the Salem Harbor down at
right.
the beach.
Right. Water from La Jolla, where I, you know, out in California, where I lived for a while and loved it. Water from Big Bear, places that I love. So water of place is very important to me, more so than moon water or solar water. But I mean, heck, you can put your crystals or your items outside in the sun. Be careful with crystals because some of them can be damaged by water or sun.
Right.
So you just want to be a little careful with that. But putting the item itself outside as opposed to charging the water is more what I do now, I guess, for ease. It's a little simpler than carrying around jugs of water that I then forget to label. I can tell you right now, you can't see it, but right here behind me, Shell, I have two jars of moon water. I don't know when I did them. I don't know what moon it was. I don't remember anything about it.
Can I just say, same. Aside from the ocean, one of my favorite places on Earth is the Thousand Islands region in northern New York, St. Lawrence Seaway. And everywhere I go, I actually carry a bottle. Not everywhere I go, like leaving the house, but every place I live, I keep a bottle of water from the St. Lawrence Seaway with me.
Yeah.
And I actually have it next to my bed here. So I don't know. I need to keep the St. Lawrence with me wherever I go. And damn it, I do. And it's weird. And yeah. It's in a Mountain Dew bottle with no label.
I get it.
But yeah, Jessica, we are going to actually do an episode on that upcoming. So stay tuned and we will give you a whole episode on water magic.
So let's see, one more here. This one's from Tam, and I really like this one because it's kind of fun. And Tam says, I have a question for you, please. Knowing that the directions correspond to the elements, north equal earth, east equals air, etc. Do the solstices and equinox also line up to directions?
They do.
They do indeed.
You know, one thing I've always wanted to do, and one day this will happen, damn it. I want to go to England and see the sunrise on the solstice. It's supposed to like come right up through, like, come on.
Right.
There are actually There are structures across the earth, a couple of them here and there, that line up with the sunrise on the two solstices, and different places align with the different solstice. So depending on where you are in the world, in these particular structures will depend where you see the sun through. Is it through the structure? Is that the best way to say it?
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. Like Newgrange, it lights up the chamber and...
Or goes through a hole in the stone,
yeah.
or like an opening between stones. So we're not going to get into who put the stones or the buildings or whatnot there. Different podcasts. But yeah, so, you know, the winter solstice is going to line up with generally the spots in the northern hemisphere, and the southern hemisphere generally more lines up with the ones that are at the summer. I don't know why.
No, that fits. Ostara is fertility. It's new beginnings. It's the beginning. So naturally that aligns up with east. In a lot of traditions, that's air. Then you have Litha, the summer solstice. The sun is at its most powerful. You know, it's summertime. It's hot. It's the longest day. And that's fire. That's south, fire and passion. Then you have the autumn equinox, sometimes contentiously called Mabin.
Very contentiously, by the way.
This one is, I would say, is water. This is the west. This is harvest and sunset. It's the end of the day. Everything is equal and balance. So west is connected to water and emotions. And I think that goes well with the setting sun of Mabin, the autumn equinox.
And I think it's a good time to kind of balance the transition between the elements, because the elements kind of, you know, clock along on that little notch of the wheel, just as everything else. So they're kind of like that balance in between switching elements.
And then like Shell said, the winter solstice, Yule, that's north, that's earth. Yule is the rebirth of light. It's quiet. You go within. It's the longest night. It's the deepest part of winter when everything is quiet and still and cold, and you go kind of within to the earth.
Including my wallet.
That's right. It's stability and grounding. It's family. You know, it's that. Why is that so true, Shell?
It is. Yule, when my wallet goes dead and cold.
That's right, dead and cold. That's right.
But to answer the question, Tam,
yes,
it does. Funny how all this stuff lines up and works together.
That's right. Now, I equated these elements with directions. That's not always going to be true. The elements and the directions that I gave you are traditional Wiccan, traditional Western European correspondences. In your practice, if you're an animist, if you're connected to your land, you may have different elements for each direction, and that is absolutely good and okay and proper.
Whatever works for you.
The element itself, Ostara, air, Litha, fire, Mabin, water.
Autumn equinox.
Right, sorry. Autumn equinox, water, and Yule, earth. So the directions don't necessarily have to go with that, but the elements correspond that way.
So there you have it.
That's the answer. So the very last email is from Anne. And Anne has a lot of questions, Shell. So we're going to tackle this as best we can before we get into our surprise thing at the end.
Okay.
All right. So Anne says that she's overwhelmed with the amount of information she needs to learn, and she wants to learn everything, which I totally get. And it's so much that sometimes she finds herself not doing anything at all because she doesn't know where to start. And she wants to know what our plan of attack was when we first started out, and how did we learn the many and varied subjects in the craft? And I think Shell kind of answered that quite a bit last episode when we were talking about Books of Shadows. In our Books of Shadows, you will find a veritable eclectic paradise of topics. As we got interested in things, we would research them like crazy. Our group would get involved. We would do rituals. We would do spells. We'd talk about it. We would read books and suggest them to each other. And then we'd write it all down. I know I say journaling all the time, but that's really what I'm going to recommend, is go with your interests. Go with what you like. Grab a book or an author or a topic. Go to your library and read as much about it as you can. And then write all the bits that you really like into your Book of Shadows, because that's going to help you remember it.
You don't have to learn everything.
No.
Like with me, and it's kind of still that way today. I really gravitated to herbalism and tarot, and everything just kind of went from there. As far as, doing actual spell work, the ins and outs of that ritual, the ins and outs of that, those tried and true 80s and 90s books, Buckland's Big Blue Book, Cunningham's Herbal Encyclopedia, Spiral Dance, those are kind of the ones that really, I don't want to say shaped us, but shaped us.
They really did. And so my best advice for this one is follow your interest. Go as much as you can in what you're interested in and do it. Get dirty. If you see a spell you like, don't just read it. Do it. Get the stuff, get a close approximation of the stuff and do it.
The other thing I want to do is, and I would feel remiss if I didn't say this, you and I early on were also blessed with a pretty kick-ass local community that we also had the opportunity to learn from as well. So those things on top of being surrounded by a really great local pagan community that, we learned a lot from those guys. And if any of you guys are listening, love ya.
And that's very true. I love our community. They're full of amazing practitioners. And I absolutely love and am grateful to our local community for that. But before I met you and before I met them, I was a solitary practitioner for years. I knew zero other pagans or witches. And that's the case for a lot of people today. Despite how popular witchcraft and paganism is, it can still be very difficult to find people to practice with. And so when I was a solitary and had no one, my biggest resource was books. Now you have so much more available to you, and usually within a short drive, there's some type of metaphysical shop, which can be a great way to meet other people.
Right.
Today, with podcasts like ours, with YouTube channels, with online conferences and festivals, you have so much opportunity to meet and learn from other people. Just be a little careful. Watch out for the people that reach out to you because they love your energy and want to teach you. But, look for reputable places, reputable conferences, and check those out. Learning from other people is invaluable.
Absolutely. And like Layla said, just be mindful of who you're dealing with because there are so many scammers and bad people out there. But yeah, books, podcasts, festivals, conferences,
And just do it. Get dirty and do
and
it.
just do it. And nothing's wrong. And if someone tells you that it's wrong, they're bullshit. That's all.
All right, so the next part, she has another question, and she says that she wants to do more, but she just feels silly sometimes and her self-doubt kicks in. Girl, I hear you on that one.
Right.
She says there's a little voice that always tells her that she's nuts for even believing in magic, and she struggles a lot with Christian guilt. And she says that to be her most powerful, she must listen to her heart and intuition, but that's so much easier said than done. And she wants to know if we have any tips from our own personal struggles. And I can say I still struggle with self-doubt and imposter syndrome. You should have seen the two of us before our workshops at Sacred
Our
Space.
fan in the wild did, and they're probably like, man, those two girls are nut jobs. No, we were having anxiety, thank
Little
you.
anxiety.
I'm gonna honestly put it out there. I do not have really any experience on the Christian guilt end of that question. The best I can say, because I know someone and had someone in my life who did have that Christian guilt. And the best thing I can say to you is you just gotta trust in what you believe and trust your heart. And, guilt is, that's kind of their hook, Don't drink the Kool-Aid. Don't drink the Kool-Aid. I get that it's easier said than done to just not feel that way, but that's kind of what they want you to do. They want you to feel guilty. And that is a secondhand experience. Personally, I have not had to deal with that, thankfully.
Now, as for the self-doubt, one of my biggest helpers in that has been going back to the science. I go back a lot to psychological theories and ideas of the brain and the idea that you can help yourself through spell work and that spell work and meditation are very, very good for you on a physical level, above and beyond magical. Even if it's just physical, meditating is good for you. Doing spell work and positive thinking and affirmations and intention setting from a psychological standpoint is good for you and scientifically proven to be good for you. So if that is all you're getting out of it, that's enough.
Now, I don't want to mention any names, but do you remember back in the day, we had a person that we regularly did ritual with and wanted us to do a ritual where we called the, what are they? Saints or archangels? What were they?
Archangels.
Yes. We did that because I remember we called Saint Michael and I'm like, is this, what are we doing? I was taken aback, but I didn't come from a super Christian background. But do you remember that when we we actually did a ritual and incorporated some quote unquote Christianness to it? Because someone had asked us to, and you know, it wasn't so bad. I'm just saying, if you have a lot of guilt, you can maybe kind of ease the transition by incorporating it. Help ease the transition.
Sure. There's a lot of Christian witches and a lot of folk magic. Folk tradition incorporates quite a few different Christian values and traditions into their magic. So you certainly could incorporate that if that would help you.
Because witchcraft, by the way, witchcraft itself, by definition, is not a religion. So just keep that in mind, that witchcraft is actually in itself not a religion.
Would the Christian think that's not something that I struggled with either? I was very happy to realize that there was more to the world than just that particular religion, and very happily left that behind. But meditate with it, I guess, is the best thing that I can say. And like Shell said, talk to, if you still feel a connection to Mary or to Jesus or to any other figure in the Bible, you know, talk to them, reach out.
Mother Teresa, she'll give you good advice.
Yeah, there you go. The biggest struggle I had is mostly with imposter syndrome. So I find a lot of comfort in the fact that putting positive intentions out there is still good for me. And I have seen enough return magically to know that it works.
But we still have imposter syndrome on occasion. Don't let us fool you.
Too true. So now the last question that she has, or actually two questions, I love this one, is what the hell is the difference between a spell and a ritual? When do I cast a spell and when do I perform a ritual? I love this.
Well, spells are kind of, you know, this is what I say to some of my Christian friends. Think of a spell as praying and think of a ritual as going to church.
Yeah, that's a great way to put it. I love that. That's really good. Yeah, spells are when you're asking for something. Spells are usually because you're trying to work your will in some way. And rituals are usually when you're giving thanks or honoring or paying homage to something. So yeah, spells are asking, ritual is thanking, I guess, is a simple way to put it.
In the Christian analogy, is it's like praying versus going to church.
Spot on. I love that. Hey. Spells can be on the fly. It can be me going, I need a parking spot, and sending that energy out to the universe. Rituals tend to be more formal. They tend to be more structured. Usually there are different steps that should be followed in
There's
a ritual.
Components.
That's right. There can be, you can make your spell very ritual-like. Your spell can have a lot of ritual parts to it, but it doesn't have to.
And you can design a ritual around your spell and you know, you can do that, but absolutely not necessary.
Right. I love how it's very simple. Prayer/asking for something, as opposed to giving thanks or honoring your ancestors. Maybe you're paying your dues, you know, maybe you're giving a sacrifice or giving something to your ancestors, your deities, your spirit guides. So it's a little different.
Side note, there's no confessional in ritual.
Is there a confession? Oh, right. right over my head. I was like, confessional. I'm like, do we do that in spells? Like, what? Is that a Wiccan thing? No.
I love you.
I didn't know. I've never been to confessional.
Okay. So, Aiden, we have done the best we could to kind of get all of your questions answered, because, you know, you had a lot of questions. But we hope that those answers can help you with your journey.
And thank you, everybody that has emailed or DM'd us questions. And I am so sorry if I haven't gotten back to you, but there's a few. I'm working through it. I'll get to you. It might be a minute, but we'll get there.
Now. Before we go, we've promised a little surprisey gifty for folks, as far as there's some knowledge that we have that people are seeking currently. I don't know what state the world is in right now, but for some reason, we've gotten like 6 requests for the famous itchy asshole spell.
I have heard requests for this itchy asshole spell.
I don't know what's going on in the world right now that this is a hot a hot need, but you know what? Enough people have asked for it. Layla, let's give them a version of the itchy asshole spell.
All right, now we will be putting this up on our website.
I could figure out a picture to go along with this so that I can put it on Instagram, I'll do it. But I just don't know.
Something that'll get past the Facebook censors.
Let me think on this, people. Let me think on this.
All right, so the back on the broomstick itchy asshole spell, you're going to need some traditional spices. You're going to need a little cayenne pepper, black pepper, cornmeal, and if you can get some stinging nettle, that's great, but regular nettle will work.
You can also use thorns from a rose if you're in a pinch.
Absolutely. You're also going to want a pink rose bud. Now, not a fully open rose. Well, I guess that depends on who you're doing this for, but typically a closed pink rose bud, some paper and a pen, a paper pen, a large pen, a red or purple or black candle. What type of incense would you use here, Shell?
Well, to be honest with you, I would take peppercorns and some of the, you know how you can get like the red pepper flakes? Usually you get them to put on your pizza.
Yeah.
Peppercorn and red pepper flakes.
We're using that in the spell, but what incense would you use?
That's usually what I use. I double it up.
Oh, okay. So be careful. If you're going to be burning peppercorns and red pepper flakes as your incense, be very careful because it'll hurt your eyeballs. You don't want that in your eyes.
I can't believe we're actually telling the public this.
I don't know why we're telling the public this,
Just
but
saying us. Anyway, keep going.
so one of the most important components is a large apple. And what you're going to want to do is take your apple, and you know the stem is on the top. If you flip it over on the butt end, yes, it's called a butt of the
I'm like a 12-year-old boy right now.
apple. That's where the flower was when the apple first grew. So that's the part that you want. You're going to cut off about half inch to an inch of the apple, almost so you have like a little dish. And you're going to place the cut side of the apple down on your cornmeal. So you have like a little crevice to put things in. Yeah, let's go with the crevice. Yeah. So you're gonna light your candle and your incense, and you're gonna write this person's name on the paper with intention. And you're gonna take that paper as you pass it through the smoke 3 times. You're also going to fold it 3 times, and you're going to say,
I fold your name in the heat and smoke, intense discomfort to provoke, a reminder sharp, an itch to teach. The find out part is within your reach.
then you're going to pin that paper shut. And if you feel like stabbing that paper repeatedly before you pin it shut with your pin, that's okay. Go for it.
You do you, man.
Now you're going to take the paper and you're going to light it with a candle and drop it into your cast iron cauldron or your safe burning dish. And you're going to take that pink, perfect little rosebud and you're going to crush and mangle that rosebud over the burning paper and drop it onto the paper.
Tell them what they gotta say.
You have to say with intention and say this like you mean it. Your tender bud, so pink and sweet, mangled now with revenge and heat.
Oh, yeah.
Make sure this person deserves it, by the way.
Now, Layla and I have a little variation on this next step. So you mix the cayenne pepper, the black pepper, the nettle together, and you add to the pepper ash the rose petals. But what I also do is I flip over the apple and I take some of that Red's hot sauce and I put the Red's hot sauce on that part of the bottom of the apple that kind of looks like an asshole. I'm just saying. And then
So put your red hot on that flower part of the apple, and then
why are we giving this to the public?
I don't know. And while you're mixing all the ingredients together in your cauldron, you're going to say, fuck around, find out. Fuck around, find out. Fuck around,
Around, find
find
out.
out. And then you're going to put that mixture on the apple butt, on the flower part of that apple, and make sure you are putting it there with all the energy you can muster because this person deserves it. Now you're going to take your pin that had previously stabbed into their name paper, and you are going to stab the apple butt 9 times, 27 if you're super pissed.
I generally just go right to 27, but that's me.
Yeah. And you're going to say,
Prickle, burn, poke, and itch. Justice is served. Karma's a bitch.
And this is when you're going to be raising your energy and pouring it into your ingredients right there. Once you have charged that apple and all the ingredients on the little apple butt plate, you're going to take your candle and seal it. You can do it just a couple drops of wax onto the herbs, or you can completely seal it with wax. You do.
Go big or go home, people. Go big or go home.
That's right. And imagine the heat and the burn of this dropping wax adding to and sealing the spell for this itchy asshole spell. Then you're going to do a couple different things. Disposing of a spell can be important too. If you want to just get rid of this bitch and no longer think about them and their itchy butt ever again, just throw it in the garbage.
You know what I've done before?
What's that?
I've actually thrown it out in the yard when I knew animals were coming through to eat it, so it got eaten.
There you go. That works. Make sure you take the pin out if you're going to do that.
Oh, no. I take the pin out before I do
it. You can bury it in the ground if you would like this energy to slowly be transformed and taken away from you.
But also take the pins out if you're going to bury it in the ground.
Exactly. Make sure it's just the organic part. And again, just the organic part. You can put it in a compost bin if you would like that energy to be transformed into something else and to grow into something new. So how you dispose of it can also help disperse that energy in a certain way.
You know how I close out this spell, me personally?
How's that?
With a big fuck you.
Yes. Scream that to the universe.
Put it out there, man. Fuck you.
They have fucked around. They are about to find out, and they will have an itchy asshole that they will not be able to soothe. So make sure they deserve it.
As funny as it is, be careful the magic you wield, because, you know, like they say, careful what you wish for. It'll just happen. You don't want this backfiring, because the backfire is your asshole will itch. So just be careful, folks. Hex with caution.
And while we don't necessarily believe in the Wiccan version of the rule of three, we do believe that all actions have reactions.
As long as you're willing to take the karma, we're all good here.
Shell and I usually ascribe to, if you're going to be doing this magic, make sure that they deserve it and make sure you're willing to take the consequences, whatever they may happen to be.
100.
There you go. And that's it. That's our answers and our itchy asshole spell.
Use it wisely, folks. Use it wisely, please. And with that being said,
thank you all so much for listening to Back on the Broomstick. Make sure you like, subscribe, comment, give us a review. We'd love to read those.
And if we do see you in the wild, you say hi, talk to us, chat with us.
We might seem shy at first, but we open up and then you can't shut us up. We just keep talking.
That's pretty much how it goes.
So check us out on Facebook, YouTube, Instagram. We have a brand new Facebook group that is growing and has a wonderful community of people.
Back on the Broomstick Podcast Discussion Group.
Check them out on Facebook. They are an amazing group of people, so knowledgeable, and everybody just seems so cool.
And Layla and I are part of the group too, and we actually comment and post on it too. So we're a part of the chat. Join us. Speaking of our fan page, we want to give a shout out to Helen Jojo for doing this for us. You are amazing. We love you. We thank you. And you're awesome for doing it. Thanks.
You rock. Thank you so much. What a cool group.
We appreciate it.
Check it out. So we hope to see you there. And the winner of the tarot reading by Shell has been chosen.
Check out our Facebook page. If you are one of the donors, check your email. Layla sent you an email if you are the winner. So if you got into that drawing, check the email and you and I will coordinate a date to do a tarot reading.
And if you want to donate to help out the show, check out the show description. At the bottom, there's a support the show link. So thank you all so very much. We will see you next week on Friday for Back on the Broomstick. Be wise, be wicked.
Keep it witchy.